You're listening to The Back 40, the podcast for Ontario farmers, covering topics and issues that matter most to Ontario agriculture. Brought to you by Trillium Mutual Insurance, bringing the ag community together one podcast at a time. I'm the host of The Back 40, Mike Brine, agribusiness specialist at Trillium Mutual Insurance. Farmers are notorious for always wanting the latest technology and the latest toy that they can play with. Some of the technology that is coming down the road and some of it that's here has to do with scouting of crops and being able to find problems in those fields easier. The drone technology that is out there is something that has come on board in the last couple of years. It's progressed to where we're starting to see a lot of it being used on farm. Today, I'm talking with Russ Barker from Better Crops by Barker. Russ is a Pioneer seed dealer. He's also a certified crop advisor. And this year, he is offering services of scouting fields using a drone. Russ, welcome to the Back 40.
Thank you, Mike.
So you've been in the industry for quite a few years as a certified crop advisor. I know you've walked a lot of fields. Why did you go to offering this service through the drones?
Two reasons. I've always known from talking to my pilot friends that there are no secrets when you are in the air, flying over crops and fields. A lot of things that you do show up clearly from the air. When you're looking at them from the ground, the pattern is not necessarily apparent. And it's difficult to pick out things sometimes when you're looking at the ground, particularly in the area of identifying field patterns, equipment. Patterns, equipment tracks, application, physical application errors, and differences that they have done over the field. I'm also, I got to admit, if I was 40 years younger, I would have been a pretty serious gamer. I do enjoy that aspect of the toggles and the screen and playing with a toy in a sense. The other reason that I got into it is that I have a YouTube channel. The reason why I have YouTube is that when I first was a Pioneer sales rep, that was back in the days of paper. I used to inform customers via newsletters, which was the only way you had at the time, other than picking up the phone. It's the only thing you had at the time that you could communicate with customers on a regular basis. I gradually got a little frustrated with newsletters. They're expensive. They're not very timely. And I wanted better ways to communicate information directly to customers, kind of as it happens. I started a blog and I used that during the growing season. That seemed to go pretty well because you could be very, very topic specific and very timely. I got a little bored writing and it was kind of time consuming. And along about 2017, I started my YouTube channel. The reason for it was the same thing. I wanted to get timely information out to people. It was a different way of doing it. It challenged me to do some different things. I learned a lot. You fast forward to a year ago, I always knew that drone video footage was a nice add-on. The two reasons I got into drones was, as you mentioned, crop scouting, looking at fields from a different perspective, and also just as an add-on to keep our YouTube channel, just give it a different feel and different look. And customers have responded to it fairly well so far.
Farmers are always into that latest technology. And as you say, it's more than just a toy, but it is a lot of fun to use it, I imagine. Well, you mentioned about seeing things that you don't see when you're walking the field. And I think any of us that have done this, you walk a field and all of a sudden you look and you're in the middle of a poor spot in the field and you look around and you think, yeah, it's this size. If you get a look at that from the air, you often find that that's far more widespread than what you can tell from the ground area.
That's definitely true. And it might show up in a spot that you're not currently standing in. Experienced crop scouts that do it a lot, and there's some very good ones across the province, they can pretty quickly motor up and down a field and get a good handle on issues. However, they're not my target. My target is the farmer audience. And farmers, you know, have so many different things to occupy their time, and field walking, field scouting doesn't always come to the top of their priority list. So I'm just bridging that gap and giving them a look on their own fields and also using other fields as comparison, point out some things that are going on that certainly may help them in their decision making going forward.
There's a couple of things there. You've seen and will see a lot more of this through the drone than what your average farmer would see if they were just doing the crop scouting themselves or running their own drone. But also I would imagine that you feel that this is probably going to save a lot of your time too, because it is time consuming to walk that field and find the problems that are in there. There's only so fast that we can manage getting through it.
Yeah, I can fly a field by just flying manually, looking for patterns, looking for images. Probably can find what I'm looking for in a matter of 15, 20 minutes. I have video recording of it. I can download and link that back to the customer via a private link. It automatically loads to the cloud, and then I provide a link to the customer that he can view whatever footage I've taken, if we're just doing video footage, and look at it and see exactly what we're talking about and see for himself what's going on. It's pretty cool.
I would assume, though, in certain circumstances that it may identify an area, but it's no substitute for actually standing in that spot and just having a look, digging a plant, look at the roots, and look at everything from a much closer perspective.
Yes. If you get into the unique characteristics of the field in terms of soil type and plant growth and some of those physiological differences, you do just have to go back out to that physical spot and start to dig to determine what maybe was the cause in that case. A drone will never replace boots on the ground. It's a different story when corn gets 8 feet tall. It's not a lot of fun to walk through.
No, and it's really hard to tell whether it's 8 feet or 7 feet. Sometimes you don't see that the top of that canopy, and it's harder to distinguish what some of those problems could be in that field.
As you know, we had a windstorm there last summer that ripped through Kirkton, and there was damage in cornfields. And you know yourself, you try to walk through a large cornfield, you don't get very far. You put a drone up and go over that field quickly, you can see exactly the degree of damage from something like a windstorm. And the advantage of a quadcopter is you can hover. I can go right down and sit right on top of a corn plant, and I can actually determine, in that case with wind damage, I can determine which way it was leaning. My son, as you know, is a custom applicator, and we actually use that stuff, that kind of imagery, and those kinds of investigative tools to determine whether he could actually go down that corn with this high clearance sprayer and keep the damage to a minimum, or whether it was even worth using his sprayer and maybe call in the airplane instead.
That look at the canopy is something that we often want to see during the year. The next time that we're going to see that is when we're sitting in the combine seat. And at that point, you're just wishing for what you might have done back in the summer. This is going to make quite a difference to the decisions that can be made from middle of June through and until the end of August.
The one crop that hides almost nothing is a cereal crop. It is incredible what you can see over top of a cereal crop from your applications, physical movement, physical applications, tracks, patterns across the field. I had two manure tankers spreading swine finishing manure. When I got up looking at it from the drone, I could see distinct differences. The one tanker was perfectly uniform. The other tanker left gaps and strips. And it wasn't because he was driving wide. Went back and discovered that his splash deflector plate at the back of the spreader was wore, and he wasn't getting a full pattern. And that stuck out on that cereal crop. It wasn't something that you could readily see from the ground, but 2 minutes in the air was very obvious that something was going on. And so each crop kind of has its own unique characteristics looking at it from the air. And cereals are fantastic. They show us all kinds of things.
And a situation like that, that's something that down the road, a simple fix like fixing that deflector pad is going to make huge difference is in what the yields can be on subsequent crops, just simply because now that pattern is going to be uniform.
Sure. Your fertility and everything across the width, that tanker spread for this coming year is going to be significantly better, because the owner of the tanker said to me, goes, "That means I've been messing up in my corn too." You put a supplemental N on across the field normally, so it all masks that type of stuff. But it sure would be having an impact on the P and K, the base fertility, direct behind the spreader versus out on the edges.
What sort of safety protocols are built in, and what sort of safety protocols do you have to follow in order to safely operate the drone?
With my current license, I cannot fly over urban areas. I'm restricted. I can't fly over public events. It's in the software that comes with the drone and the DJI app. Airport boundaries are automatically built into the app. If you are too close to a registered airport, the drone won't even take off. It has a set ceiling in the software at 300 feet. It should always be basically in line of sight from where you're operating. So I really can't fly any more than about 2 kilometers at best from the point I'm standing. Generally, 1 kilometer is about the limit. And consequently, at 300 feet, you're generally below the level that most planes would be flying. And if you hear a plane at all in the vicinity, you just get down and land. The biggest risk, as you know, in our area are the crop dusters. Those guys applying fungicides to our cornfields and wheat fields certainly fly under that 300-foot level. Fortunately, they're loud enough. You have no problem hearing them. You just land, stay out of their way, wait for them to leave.
Other than yourself, how available is the service out there in the industry? Are we seeing widespread adoption of the technology, or is it still in its infancy?
It's growing. The other aspect to my particular drone is the additional software, Drone Deploy. They are one of the largest software providers to drones. Agriculture is just a small part of their offering. I have the ability to pre-program flight paths, and within 6 to 12 hours, I'm going to have those images turned around, and we can look at the field from a different perspective. Growth analysis and other analytical things that come out of those flights. That is the part that is less available and is the part that will grow over time with drones. But the ability to look at things from the point of view of more than just the nice camera and the pretty pictures and the pretty video is to allow us to do some further vegetative analysis, growth analysis. I can identify things that we can do, and maybe some things that really there's not much we can do to actually fix that spot. But I always like to know what I don't know. I like to know that even if I can't do a whole lot about it at the moment, at least I know that. The other thing that is the big reason I got into it is the ability to do plant population and stand counts in corn. I knew this technology for quite a while because the Pioneer Breeding Research world have been using drones for a number of years. They don't actually go into plots and do physical stand counts anymore. They use drone technology to measure populations in their research plots. And I was just drooling and waiting until that technology trickled down to us at the field level. And it became available 18 months ago. Our agronomist beta tested it 2 years ago. They have been using it pretty much exclusively for the last 2 years, looking at plant stand counts and plots that they run. I want the same ability to plant stand counts. And that's another big reason why I got into the quadcopter type of drone. Was to have the ability to use that technology, that plant stand count, to help us fine-tune planter performance and quickly identify the variability in plant stand counts across the field. But again, that has to be programmed. That's part of the software package it's called Corteva Flights, and now is going to be offered within the Drone Deploy software packages. And you set a program, you program the flight, it'll pick the spots in the field to check. And in a matter of about 10 minutes, you can have a 50-acre field of corn. You'll have sampled it in 12 different spots. It spits out almost on the side of the field within 10 minutes, the actual population counts in those specific 10 locations. This will be the first year I'm going to actually be able to do that. That particular stand count technology is becoming a little more available. That's one that none of my competitors can offer. In my business, I'm big on agronomy, big on providing services. Going forward, we're just scratching the surface on drones. They're going to become far more commonplace. You already read in the farm press and see videos of drones that do actual applications. They can apply fungicide and herbicides. Now they can carry payloads with larger drones and do a lot of different things. But as you mentioned before, there's one thing that you'll never be able to totally replace, and that's your boots on the ground and walk through the dirt and take your shovel and spade and do some investigation work as well. It's an augment to things you already do.
Right. It's a tool that helps you make decisions that where you otherwise wouldn't have that information.
The hurdle that we eventually have to become is being able to integrate all these different platforms together. Currently, there's quite a disconnect across the industry. And the challenge at the moment is taking, as an example, my vegetative index and incorporating that, layering it over either the as-planted map or the harvest map from the combine. That's the part in the technology world that has to change and will change, I believe, in time. We'll be able to layer all this stuff together. For the analytics of the world, a little bit like myself, it'll provide additional information to help us going forward, certainly, and become better, more consistent producers of the crops we grow.
Without that integration right now, you're limited to taking those three examples that you had there and spreading them out in front of yourself and having a look and trying to correlate that yourself. It would be much nicer if you could have a computer that would do that correlation for you and give you some real data and help you with more information to make those decisions. Do you like what you're hearing from the Back 40? We'd like to hear from you. Send us an email with your comments and thoughts to theback40@trilliummutual.com. Or follow us on social media at Trillium Mutual. We've had the option then of doing the scouting with the drones, but there's also imagery that's available using satellites. What's the difference between the information that you can pull from a satellite versus what information that you're going to provide through your drones?
There's a real strong incentive for major agricultural companies to be into the precision ag sphere. But Pioneer has an offering called Granular Insights. Granular Insights provides a satellite imagery. It provides the ability to take as planted maps and integrate them into harvested maps and can give you that satellite imagery as a further tool. The satellite imagery, it is improving. However, it is not as good as a drone at picking off vegetative growth differences. I can see them much better, and they stand up much more distinctly with a drone. The other thing is that I can take a drone and fly a field at multiple times over the growing season and always have an image that you can look at. The thing about satellite, if it's cloud cover, you get no picture from satellite. It has to be a clear sunny day for that satellite image to work. Granted, they fly about every 5 to 7 days, but if it's got a haze or a bit of a background cloud, the image you get is worthless. I could fly that same field in the same conditions with the drone and get a far more complete picture and accurate picture of differences. The difference between drone and satellite, it's like night and day. Drone is superior, and just superior all around in that regard. And that was another reason why I wanted the drone. I wanted just a better snap of fields than what satellites can give us. I got to admit, the granular service in terms of satellite is excellent. Probably the best satellite service there is. And I'm not knocking that particular service from a satellite. It's quite good. Just satellites at the moment are limited.
There's always something out there that latest toy, that latest new toy. Fair to say, though, on this, that drones have a huge advantage over the detail and the conditions that you can see something in. But the integration on the satellites is ahead of where the drone technology is right at this moment.
From my purpose, what I like about drones is, you got to remember, we'll go back to what I said a while ago, it's a real augment to my video series. And that in itself, in combination with just the better ability to scout a field and give a more accurate vegetative map, if you wish, that's why I love my drone.
So you chose a copter-style drone. What other options are out there that people are using for scouting, and why did you go with the one you did versus some of the other options?
Yeah, the two options, as you know, are basically the quadcopter style. There's also the fixed-wing style that are available. There's advantages and disadvantages to both. The fixed-wing is faster. You can get over a field faster with a fixed-wing than you can with a quadcopter. But the quadcopter has the ability to hover. And as I said, I can stop and lower my Mavic 2 and sit right on top of a plant and actually do some little bit of individual plant diagnosis. You can see the wash of the rotors moving the leaves around at times. It's just amazing what you can see if you really want to get down close. The other thing, if we go back to what I was talking about with the plant population stand counts, you need to be able to hover. The drone sits down on top of the crop about 10 feet over the stand and takes a picture. You can't take that type of picture with a fixed wing. Through the software, it's really designed for helicopter use. That is the main reason we went that way. Pioneer in the research department world pretty much use helicopters. They're a little more versatile, say, than fixed wing.
So, Ross, what do you think is coming down the road here? As you talk, we've talked about the technology is only going to get better. The software is going to get better. The hardware is going to get better. What sort of things are we looking at from a sensor package or from a software package that might be coming down the road here?
Well, the sky's the limit, I think. The sensor technology of all type, camera technology is improving rapidly. I think we can only use our imagination to dream up potential improvements. I wouldn't be surprised that at some point we'll be able to take a snapshot of a plant health, not only from a disease point of view, but probably from a nutrient status point of view, that some type of a new technology, infrared spectrum analysis, will be able to tell us if that particular plant is nutrient deficient, the snap of an eye, and possibly then we can use corrective action to address that deficiency. It's going to get better. It's going to get better rapidly. You've got to jump into a technology at some point, and the longer you wait, the steeper the learning curve will be. I feel I have at least got into it. As you know, even when computers are first coming onto the scene, those that adopted the technology quicker, it was more easy to adapt to the next step. I think I'm in the spot now where I've started that step. The next toy, if you will, or the next tool, and integrating it into what we already know will be much easier.
Of all the things that you think might be coming down there, what is it that you would like to have right now that you can't do with the drone?
Well, I think the big thing in my world, I would love to have a snapshot of nutrient status. That would be something that would be revolutionary, particularly nutrient status at the time when we still can do something about it. You can't expect a drone or you can't expect images on a little seedling, 2 or 3 leaf corn plant. Once it gets to what we call a V5 or V6 stage, which is kind of more or less knee high, you still have time then to come back in and apply corrective action if need be. Determine that everything's hunky-dory and we don't need to do anything more and just leave it as it is. That is something that I could really see as being a valuable tool. Disease detection as well would be a valuable tool to have going for it. Those are probably the two things that I can think about at the moment that would be within reach. Maybe at the same time, there could be a little tank on the drone that if you have a nutrient deficiency, maybe you can squirt something on the plant and that'll fix it. Right? But you don't know. It's amazing what this world can do.
Yeah, and some of it hopefully is going to be things that we're going to see in our lifetime, that the technology will catch up to where we want it to be. Of course, at that point, we're going to want something else. We're going to want it just a little bit better as we go. You're offering this as part of your service as a certified crop advisor. Is this a technology that's going to end up mostly in the hands of people like yourself, or are individual farmers going to be taking advantage of this as well?
There's already a few individual farmers that are using this technology. It's already in the marketplace. You can subscribe to Drone Deploy. You can buy a subscription, buy the drone. And in the world of agriculture, that's not a huge investment. It's nothing like buying a $500,000 tractor. You're under $10,000 for to get into this technology at the moment. But at the moment, again, very few farmers that are interested in adopting that type of thing. They've got a lot of stuff on their plate. They've got a lot of different things to do. You know, they're busy enough in the barns and tending stock. They don't have the same time to scout and look at their fields. And so it's only going to be the millennial type, quick technology, curious, adoptive producer that's going to go to this level of investigating their fields. But yeah, to answer your question, Sure, there's going to be farmers that will utilize this technology, and they say there's a few that already are. The more that get into it, to be honest, the more that get into it and use it, the more we'll all learn together.
Everybody's experience really helps if we all pool it together. Then you don't have to make those mistakes or wonder what that is if somebody else has done that and could share that information with you.
The really interesting thing about my YouTube channel, I share it with a number of my fellow pioneer sales reps. It is certainly promoting a lot of curiosity and interest in pursuing the technology a little bit further. For those, again, that are inclined, it's a serious time commitment to offer these types of services. You have to be out there regularly flying. Battery charging is something that you, I mean, you can only fly so far on a given battery. And so if you're running out of battery power in a particular day, you're done. You got to get those batteries charged. So I've built an inventory of batteries to allow me to keep flying for the bulk of the day and not having to worry about getting them recharged. So there's a time commitment. There's a commitment to flying it. There's a commitment that you want to address that technology. However, it has garnered quite a bit of interest. And we'll see. They keep telling me that I'm kind of on the front edge of this thing. We'll see where it goes. Come back and ask me in 2 or 3 years.
It'll be interesting to compare our conversation, particularly about what you'd like to see and what you think is coming 2 or 3 years down the road. We may see some of that's already available, not just in a research place, but also in the commercial area as well.
Well, you and I both know there's already people working on some of those things that you just said. And it's just a matter of coming up with the right math, the right algorithms that take the images and take the data and convert it into language that a simple people down on the field at the field level can use.
What I really care about, do I have the information I need in order to make a decision today to fix why that field looks awful in that spot? And that's information that, as we see this, you're going to get more and more be able to tell what those are, and the technology is going to help you with that.
I'm excited about it. I'm looking forward to the future. It's just fun to learn. I enjoy learning, and I always have. And this is just an opportunity to accelerate the learning curve.
So from a technical standpoint here, what sort of weather can you fly these in? How much wind is a maximum there? I'm assuming you wouldn't be flying them in a rainstorm, obviously, but I would think wind would be your major issue there that would limit how much you can and how often you can go out.
Yeah, rain and lightning, thunderstorms are a bad thing to play in. Any pilot will tell you the same thing in a regular airplane. So stormy weather is definitely something that you need to avoid. Other than that, the only other limiting factor really is wind speed. Now, I found last year I could fly in a 30 to 40K wind without too much trouble. My drone controller will beep at me a little bit when you're in high winds, and it will say, caution, high winds are being detected. Please fly carefully. And so I would say if you're getting 50K wind bursts, there's no way. But a 30K sustained wind, you can still fly in that. Other than that, doesn't matter. Clouds, sun, you can still learn things in pretty near any light condition. Photographers will tell you the best time of day for taking sharp pictures with a camera is first thing in the morning and late at night when the sun's low. Middle of the day, from a photography point of view, there's more shadows, et cetera. Actually, with a drone, it's the opposite, especially when you're doing any kind of investigative vegetative analysis work. First thing in the morning, low light, late in the day, you won't get good information. You can get a lovely video in that low light, but analytically, you can be fooled in low light. So depends whether you're flying just for the fun of looking around or whether you're flying a programmed route. The other thing that will happen if you're flying in high winds, of course, it chews your batteries up much quicker. The drone has to work harder.
I have a little toy drone that I that I play with it on my back lawn. And I know if I've got much over 5 kilometer wind, it's very difficult to handle. And at 10 kilometers, it doesn't matter. It's just the wind's going to take it wherever. And it's not a great spot for a beginner like me to be learning. I've found a couple of times I've had to rescue it out of a tree. It wasn't my finest moment as a pilot. Let's put it that way.
If you fly drones, you have crashed drones.
Absolutely. My brother has flown radio controlled aircraft for years. There's this thing he calls pilot error. And then there's also equipment failure. And he's experienced both over the, oh my goodness, 40 years plus that he's flown these. What's the response been from your customer base on this, Russ? A lot of interest in having you come out and have a look at their fields?
Well, I just got the drone last summer. I actually got it about late June. And so I had almost 3 months experience with it. I was out learning. I wanted last summer to learn as much as possible. So I was out flying pretty much any day that it was suitable to be flying. I was just asking customers, hey, can I come and look at this field just to learn? And of course, everybody was quite intrigued. I started getting calls at that point. Can you come and fly this field just out of curiosity? Let's see what we can find out. And I used that experience to really learn what the drone could tell us and also what it could not tell us. So for this coming year, there has been a lot of questions on what can you do? Can I get you to come out and do some investigation and some flying on some of my farms? I know it's going to go over pretty well. It's a little early to know how well.
It's fair to say people are intrigued at this moment, but when they have a quick look at a field and see that there's something that's not right there, you're going to get a phone call to fly that field and see how widespread that issue is.
The other thing that'll happen is the next time some cattle get out into the woodlot, I'll get a call. Could you come and tell us where they are? Because actually, before I got the drone, I had a few of those calls because folks thought I had one. And I more than once, I got a call from farmers. Said, hey, I hear you've got a drone and I've lost a heifer. She fled into the woods. Would you be able to come and see if we can spot her? And so, as you know, they do get out from time to time.
From 300 feet, you can see a lot of stuff, even if it's just looking for them in a field that's not exactly flat. Something like a wheat field, for example, if they're down in a hollow, you can't see them from the front. You've got to walk the field. You put the drone up over top of it, you'll know whether there's any reason to go back there and have a look or not.
And you know what it's like, too, when they dive into a field of tossed corn. You'll have no clue where they went, but you get up above, you'll be able to figure it out.
Yeah, there'll be a little bit of a trail and the corn will be moving in the wrong direction in a couple of very localized spots.
It's going to be an interesting summer. If we come back and talked about this a year ago, I'll have more insight into what we've been able to do and what customers have been able to, how they've really reacted to it. We're just beginning to understand and use it and figure out what our customers are going to like about the service. I know one thing already, they're reacting to my YouTube videos and saying, boy, your game has sure picked up a couple notches. And the reason it's picked up a couple of notches is being integrating into the YouTube channel drone video.
I've seen some of those videos. Besides the fact that they're really great photography, there's some very interesting things that you see when you do get up over top of that crop and start looking at, as you say, the patterns that show up, which from the road you don't really see, but they're pretty obvious once you're up over top of it.
There's one thing I would add as a seed rep, reevaluating genetics, reevaluate genetic performance in fields. And as you know, we use strip plots as a means of genetic evaluation on our own farms and on customer farms. One thing that we look for in looking at hybrids that have a range of flowering dates, and those flowering dates give us clues as to how hybrids will potentially perform going forward. We sometimes can take those flowering date notes, pin them against some weather records, and it helps us maybe understand in certain conditions why hybrid A that flowered 7 days later than hybrid B either was subjected to more stress or less stress, depending on how the weather performed. When you're down in a cornfield that's starting to tassel, you get a sense, but again, you're not going to walk very far because pollinating corn is a mess to walk through. It's dirty, it's dusty. The leaves can be kind of sharp and it's just not a lot of fun. But you get above it in a drone, you can catalog those tassel date differences, the pollination date differences. You have date stamp on your video. And I know personally, from a selfish point of view, looking at strip evaluation plots, the drone told me a lot more than I could gain from a physical walkthrough. I was really impressed. Particularly then you've got a visual tutorial record of how those hybrids differed in their growth rates and their flowering dates over time. So from a genetic point of view, it is a valuable tool to interpret particular corn hybrid performance.
That's something this year, as you have a look at some of your plots, and it'd be interesting to do a regular flyover on them at in around the tasseling time. And that's going to tell you some information when you are able to correlate it with yield.
Exactly. And as you know, you can also quickly tell just the effect of variability across the field. If you've got spots that are stressed, they will tend to flower later. And they will flower less vigorously than areas that are less stressed. And so you get a very good snapshot of a field at flowering time, the consistency across that field. And that consistency isn't always nearly as readily apparent with a ground walk because A, it's a pain in the neck to walk through it, and B, the differences from the ground view are not as apparent as they are from the view or top of the field.
Yeah, when the top of the canopy is over your head, there's only so much that you're going to be able to tell about how much variability there is there. We kind of know by there's a little more light coming through than there was a few minutes ago. But other than that, it's very difficult to tell.
Yeah. And as you know, if you climbed up a silo and the field was beside the silo, at least you kind of got to look that way back in the day.
I do remember that going up onto the silo or even onto the feed tank there, that you go up onto the feed tank and turn around and have a look. You can see quite a bit of variability. And my farm's not terribly flat as some of them are. But even just getting up 20 or 25 feet made a huge difference to what you could see over the field. And a field that you thought looked really good, right about tassel time, you look at it and it's like, oh, this does not look very even at all at that point.
Again, it's a tool that you can use to get just a different picture of your own farm. And you couple that with your own knowledge, having run that farm, cropped that field, you've got a sense of where things are different. And this gives you insight into helping further understand why they're different.
More information means better decisions.
In theory, yes. But you're right. you're absolutely right.
That's maybe I should say it means the opportunity to make better decisions.
There we go. Yes, you still have to make the conscious decision to actually do something.
That sounds like a no-brainer, but it's really not. So many of us look at that information and we think, oh, that's good to know. But we don't take it that next step and pull the trigger and say, okay, now here's the time to make that decision.
It boils down to how much value you put on that information. And if you put value on that specific information, you'll make decisions. In my view, for the most part, make better decisions, no question.
We've been talking with Russ Barker from Better Crops by Barker. Russ, it's been great to talk to you today. Thanks very much for joining us.
Well, thank you very much, Mike. It's been a lot of fun being here. Thank you.
You've been listening to The Back 40. Join us next time when our guest will be Marianne Follis, Senior Manager of Programming with 4-H Ontario. You've been listening to The Back 40, brought to you by Trillium Mutual Insurance. Be sure to subscribe to The Back 40 wherever you find your favorite podcasts so that you don't miss an episode. The Back 40, bringing the ag community together one podcast at a time. I'm Mike Brine. Until next time, take care and stay safe.